Okay, this week's parasha is Parashas Kisisa. Begins on page 484. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemar. Hashem said to Moshe, saying, Kisisa esroish b'nei Yisrael lefkudeihem. When you count the heads of the Jewish people according to their numbers, each person should give an atonement for his soul when they are counted. There shall be no plague when they are counted. Gentlemen, this is what they should give. All those who pass the counting, meaning all those who will pass through the numbers, they should give a half a shekel of the holy shekel. Esrim geira hashekel. Each shekel is the weight of esrim geira. Machtis hashekel should be a half of a shekel. Truma l'Hashem, a separation to God. Kol ha'iver al apkudim, all those who pass through the numbers, the b'nesrim shana v'mala, from 20 years and up, yitain trumas Hashem, shall give the separation of God. Ha'asher lo yarbe, the rich one shall not give more, v'hadal lo yamit, the poor shall not give less, m'machzis ha'shakel, from half a shekel, l'seis is trumas Hashem, to give the separation of God, l'chapar nafshos seichem, to atone for your souls. So when we read this beginning of the parasha, we seem to be reading how, when the census is taken, when the Jewish people are to be counted, you don't count them directly, rather you count them by each one giving a half shekel. Instead of counting the people, you count the shekelim, you count the coins. And the coins they are to give for the census is what's called a half a shekel. Now Rashi here tells us that actually the psukim here, the pasuk, all these psukim here are not just talking about one donation of half a shekel, but it's actually talking about three different types. It's not just talking about one type of donation of half a shekel, but rather it's talking about different types of donations here. And this can be found in Rashi, pasuk Yudalid, which is on the right column, and it's like 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines from the bottom, which begins with Dalet Aleph, which is an acronym for Davar Acher. V'chapra nafshoseichem, to atone for your souls. V'fi sheramaz lehem kan gimel trumas. There are three separations, or three donations, that are alluded to here. Shnechtev tam trumas Hashem gimel pa'amim. The words, a separation to God, we find it mentioned three times. And therefore, each time that it says trumas Hashem, each time that it says a donation, a separation to God, it's actually representing each one is its own distinct donation. Achas trumas adonim. One of them Rashi calls the donation for the adonim. The adonim were the bases. The walls of the Mishkan, or the tabernacle, were made from boards. The boards had like two, I'm not sure what the word in English is. I think it's spelled T-N-O-N-S, tenons on the bottom. Two like pieces sticking out from the bottom. And those two pieces were fit into two sockets. Those sockets were called adonim, they were called bases, they were made out of silver. And each board had two silver sockets on the bottom. So one of the donations that we're referring to here, when it says Trumas Hashem, the Rashi says, actually referring to three different types of donations. One donation was the donation towards the creating, the making, the forming of these bases. Shemanan, that the Jewish people were counted, when they began donating towards the construction of the Mishkan, the Jewish people were counted. Each person gave a half shekel. And the total of this donation turned out to be 100 kikar, a certain measure of silver. As the pasuk later on is going to say, and the money that was collected for counting the assembly was 100 kikar. And it was from them that these bases for the walls of the Mishkan were made. Shenem Rabimas Kikar, etc. So one donation the Torah is alluding to over here, that was a donation of a half a shekel, was a half a shekel that was given towards creating those adonim, those bases for the bottom of the Mishkan that the wall, that the boards which created the walls of the Mishkan were inserted into. And actually, they were not just given, you know, just as a donation for the adonim, they were given as part of accounting, as part of a census. There was a census taken at the beginning of the donations towards the Mishkan, and the census was done through each person giving a half a shekel. Where did those half shekels go towards? They went towards the making of the adonim, of the bases for the walls of, for the boards that created the walls of the Mishkan. Vashenis, the second donation, afia yidei minyan, that also was part of a census. Shemanan mishuhukam b'mishkan, when the Mishkan was erected, they, again the Jewish people were counted. Hu haminyan ha'omer b'tchilas chemesh ha'pekudim b'echad l'chedesh ha'sheni b'shana ha'shenis, and this is the counting that we have at the beginning of the Book of Amidbar. V'nasnu kalechad machtes ha'shekel, there too, each person gave a half a shekel, and the half a shekel was used as a census for the Jewish people. What did they go towards? Behein liknois mehen karbonis tzibur shel kol shana v'shana. They were actually used towards the communal sacrifices of each year. I mean, the truth is, this was something that went on for generations. It wasn't just a one-time deal. It started at the time when the Mishkan was erected, at the point now the Jewish people are ready to bring the communal sacrifices, and the communal sacrifices, every Jew had to contribute towards those communal sacrifices. And every year, a person was obligated to give a half a shekel towards the communal sacrifices. The first time that was done, it was done as part of a census. And that is the census being described at the beginning of the Parshas Bamidbar, and that's the second donation of half a shekel that's being referred to here in the Pasuk. V'hushvu behem aniyim v'ashirim. And when it came to giving of the half a shekel, everybody was the same. You are poor, you are rich, you give a half a shekel, nothing more, nothing less. V'aloysa truma nema v'chapa napshay seichem. Regarding that separation, the Pasuk here says to atone for yourselves. Shekabanas ha'chaparahim bayim. That is alluding to the half shekel given towards the communal sacrifices. The communal sacrifices were to bring atonement for the Jewish people. And that's why here in the parasha it says that by giving the half shekel, you will gain atonement for your soul.
I understand that for counting, it's actually very important for everyone to give the same thing.
Right.
But for atonement, why should everybody give the same thing?
Because it's an atonement that's part of the communal sacrifices that everybody was the same in.
Okay.
Vahashlishis, the third donation, he Trumas HaMishkan. That is referring to the Trumas HaMishkan, the donations towards the creation of the Mishkan. K'mar Shenema, as it says, Kol Meirim Trumas Kesef Unachayshes, all those who donated silver, copper, V'hoyse Yad Kulam Shababa, everyone was not the same in regard to that. Ish Ish Mashanad V'libay, each person gave what he wanted to give. So we have three times the word a separation to God is mentioned. Each one is referring to a separate donation. One was the donation towards the creation of the adonim, of the bases. The second one is referring to the donation of the Jewish people towards the communal sacrifices. Both those donations were half a shekel. Both those donations, everybody gave half a shekel no matter who they were. The third time it says separation to God is talking about the general donation toward the donation of materials towards the construction of the Mishkan, and there people gave according to how much and whatever material they wanted to give. Okay, so there's a couple of questions here that have to be asked, and the commentary Ber Yosef starts with the following question. He says we can understand why it was necessary for everyone to contribute to the communal sacrifices. It's the sacrifices for everyone. Everyone has to have a part of it. Why did everyone have to specifically give towards the Adonim? Why was it necessary to have a special collection, a specific collection, towards the creation of the Adonim? You know, when it came to everything else in the Mishkan, people gave whatever materials they wanted to give. And wherever they went, whatever they went for, they went for. Why was there a specific collection for the Adonim, for those silver sockets, those silver bases that were put under the boards that created the walls of the Mishkan? That's question number one. Question number two is why a half a shekel? Why half? Why not whole? Famous question. Why half a shekel? Okay. So the Be'er Yosef begins explaining the following way. Many commentaries point out that each part of the Mishkan actually represents a mitzvah of the Torah. Every part of the Mishkan, every part of the making of the process of the service of the Mishkan, every part of the Mishkan represents a different mitzvah of the Torah and a different part of the human body. And actually, as the Nefesh HaChaim writes, the Nefesh HaChaim says that the goal, the purpose of being told the description of the structure of the Beis HaMikdash in Tanakh and the description of the Mishkan that we have here is all so that the Jewish people should understand that each one of every part of the Mishkan represents a concept. And it represents a concept that the Jewish people are to learn from. Each part of the Mishkan represents a mitzvah, and because it represents a mitzvah, and we know every one of the mitzvahs corresponds to a different part of the person's body, the same way the Mishkan is meant to be, is the dwelling place of the Shechina, it's the goal is not for the Shechina to dwell in the Mishkan. The goal is for the Shechina to dwell in the Jewish people. And because the Mishkan represents every one of the mitzvahs, and every one of the mitzvahs represents a different part of a person, so the point is just as the Shekhinah rests in the Mishkan, it's meant to rest in the Jewish people. How does it rest in the Jewish people? By the Jewish people taking the lessons and the illusions of the Mishkan that represent all the different mitzvahs of the Torah, whatever lessons and allusions are for the mitzvahs in the Mishkan, the Jewish people are to take those lessons of the mitzvahs and are to live by the mitzvahs. They're supposed to take those lessons through the Mishkan. The Mishkan itself represents all the mitzvahs, and the Jewish people are to learn from the Mishkan how to do the mitzvahs, because each part of the Mishkan represents a mitzvah. And it represents a mitzvah to impart to the Jewish people a lesson. It's meant to impart the influence of each one of the mitzvahs to the Jewish people. And through the Jewish people taking the allusions, the lesson of the mitzvahs that lie in the Mishkan, just as the Mishkan has a divine presence resting in it, the divine presence then rests in the Jewish people. So by the Jewish people seeing the Mishkan and studying the Mishkan and taking the lessons out of the Mishkan, they basically make themselves like the Mishkan. And then as the Mishkan has a Shekhinah resting in it, now the Shekhinah rests in the Jewish people. So therefore, says the Be'er Yosef, now that we have that principle, that the Mishkan represents the mitzvahs of the Torah, let's try to figure out, what do these adonim, these silver sockets that acted as bases for the walls of the Mishkan, what do they represent? Clearly, these adonim, these sockets, are a base, they're like a foundation. The walls, in order for them to be able to stand up, because of the way they're formed, they have to, the two like sticks that stick out from the bottom, have to be inserted into these bases, and through them, the walls stand up. If the walls stand up, you have a Mishkan. If the walls can't stand up, you don't have a Mishkan. So the Adonim, these bases, are representing the idea of supporting the Mishkan. They support the Mishkan. So what is it, what mitzvah would we say is the foundation and the support for the rest of the Torah? And the answer to that is emuna. Emuna. Our belief in Hashem, that is the foundation of the entire Torah. The Gemara in Makkos tells us, V'tzadik v'menasu yichya, the one principle that everything relies on, that everything stems from, is the righteous man lives by his emuna, by his faith and belief in Hashem. And therefore, if faith, belief in Hashem, is what the entire Torah stands on, which is very understandable, so what part of the Mishkan alludes to Emunah? Says the Be'er Yosef, it's those bases. those vases that hold up the walls of the Mishkan, they are what they allude to Emunah. And my understanding is that the Jewish people, I mean, you know, on your own, you can understand that Emunah is the basis for everything. But when you now have a Mishkan, and people have this image, you have the bases, it holds up the wall, everything is held up by these bases. If these bases now represent the Emunah, the Jewish people have this illusion in the Mishkan itself of the bases, just as the bases hold up the walls, so too Emunah holds up the rest of the Torah. So now what the Beis Yosef is saying this. If the point is that these adonim, these bases represent Emunah, they represent belief in Hashem. So now we can start answering the question, why did everyone have to contribute towards these bases, these adonim, more than any other part of the Mishkan? And he explains like this. When it comes to every other mitzvah, of course we're all obligated in 613 mitzvahs equally. Okay? But the bottom line is that at the end of the day, we all basically fulfill the mitzvah. We're not all the same in the fulfillment of the mitzvah. For instance, when it comes to studying Torah, right? We all have to study Torah. But some of us study Torah more than others. Some of us are able to study Torah more than others. Some of us have the opportunity to study Torah more than others. And some of us are more knowledgeable than others when it comes to Torah. When it comes to tzedakah, not everybody gives the same amount of tzedakah. Everybody has the ability to fulfill the mitzvah, but actually they don't fulfill the mitzvah all at the same level. When it comes to Emunah, Emunah is a mitzvah that everyone has to be the same in. Everyone has to be the same. You know, the Gemara tells us that if you go ahead and believe in 612 and a half mitzvahs, and not 613, right, the other 612 don't count. There's no such thing as, well, I believe in 612, and you believe in 613, and he believes in 500. I believe in half, you believe in whole, and he believes in a quarter. You can't do that. Emunah doesn't work that way. Emunah, the essence of Emunah, has its principles. Everyone must believe in those principles. How strong our Emunah is, you know, how strong our faith is, how much we're able, you know, how much of an effect our Emunah has in our lives, that's true. Everybody's going to be different in that. But the essential Emunah, the essential faith, has to be the same by everyone. Everyone has to believe in the same thing. You can't have one person believing this much and that person believing that much. If you don't believe the whole thing, you don't have belief. You don't have it. And therefore...
Just had a question that... I remember that the Judaism was positioned as based on facts, which is usually opposed to belief.
Well, whatever word you want to use, it's a hard word to use, but we have certain principles, right, that we believe in. They have a certain, let's call it a factual basis, okay? But the principles themselves are principles of belief. Are principles that we live by, principles that, whatever word you want to use, know, believe, but there are certain principles that we have to hold by. And you can't have one person holding by some and another person holds by some other ones. That doesn't work. Emunah has to be the same by all. Therefore, being that Emunah has to be the same by all, and the Adonim and the bases represent Emunah, everyone had to contribute to it. It couldn't be that everyone, you know, I'll contribute and I won't contribute. Everybody had to contribute to it. And everybody had to contribute the same. They could contribute the same because everyone has to be the same when it comes to Emunah. Therefore, everyone had to do it, everyone had to do the same. Based on that, says the Ber Yosef, let's now try to explain why it has to be a half shekel. Why does it have to be a half shekel? And on that, the Ber Yosef answers, because it's true as we say, the principles of our Emunah, the principles of what we believe in, what we live by, what influences our life, the principles are all the same. But we know that those principles can be rattled. We know those principles can be shaken. We know that when we see certain things that contradict our Emunah is weakened. So we believe that Hashem runs the world. But then we have a lot of questions on how Hashem runs the world. If Hashem runs the world, then why do the righteous suffer? Why do the Jewish people as a whole suffer? Why do individuals suffer? Emunah is something that, again, it's our principles that we have to hold by, but they can be shaken because of the questions that we encounter in life. So how do we answer those questions? We really don't answer those questions. But the way that we approach how to deal with those questions is basically by again believing that because Hashem runs the world and Hashem has the benefit for us individually and as a people and for the world, what we are seeing in front of us is not the whole picture. We're not seeing the whole picture. We're not seeing what we cannot, we don't see Hashem's complete plan. We see a part of a plan. We don't see the whole plan. And as human beings, we actually can't see the entire plan. And because we are limited in the scope of how much we can perceive and how much we can see and how much we can understand, we're left with the questions. But if we'd be able to see the whole picture, we wouldn't have those questions. So I'll share with you a very famous mashal, very famous parable that's given to bring out this idea. Then when you don't see the whole story, you're not going to be able to fully understand. If you don't see the whole story, you can't understand. When you don't understand, you're left with questions. And the only way you could actually move on without the answer to the questions is by believing that I don't have the whole picture. I don't have the whole picture to see how this fits in to my benefit, or to the Jewish people's benefit, or to the world's benefit. So the Ber Yosef brings down from a sefer called Kanaf Renanim that gives the following parable. There was once a city boy who every day, sat down by the table. His mother put down a loaf of bread on the table, and he just took it for a fact that such a thing as a loaf of bread. Where does it come from? As far as he knows, it could grow on a tree. He has no idea where a loaf of bread comes from. One day, they send him out to the country to visit his uncle, the farmer, to spend the summer there, to spend a lengthy amount of time there. Okay, what does he see? He sees them taking wheat kernels. They take the wheat kernels and they grind them up. And they turn them into a flour. They take the flour and mix it with water. They put it in an oven, and out comes the bread. Ah, now he knows bread doesn't grow on trees. He knows how bread is made. Fine. Does he know where it really starts from? Doesn't know yet. So as he's going around to look around on the farm, he sees a big field. It's nice and it's even. Everything looks smooth and neat. And he sees the farmer get on his plow and he starts digging up all the ground. Why is he messing up? It was so nice and even and neat. Why is he messing it up like that? All right. That's what he's doing. But then, can you imagine? You know those little pieces of wheat that they made the bread from? He takes some of that and he throws it on the ground. And then he plows up the dirt again and he buries it under the ground. Why is he doing that to those beautiful kernels that make that wonderful bread? What's he going to do? A month later, comes back to the field. Ooh, the field looks very nice. It's nice and green and it's covered by things. And as he stays longer, he sees these nice golden stalks that come and grow and they fill up the field and the wind blows and they move back and forth. It's really beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Okay, now he understands what the farmer was doing. All of a sudden, the farmer comes with his tractor and he starts cutting down the wheat. And he's ruining the field. Unbelievable. What's he doing? He's ruining the field. These beautiful flowers growing out of the ground. Now he cuts them down. Why is he doing that? And then all of a sudden, he brings these boards and these animals and they're stepping all over the wheat. Why do you want the animals stepping all over these things? He can't understand what's going on. But then he notices that after they gather everything up, look at that. There are those wheat kernels that he saw you make bread from. And there's a lot more of them now than there were before. So now that he's stuck around and he's seen the whole picture from beginning to end, now he understands the entire process. And until now, each process on its own, which he has no experience and understanding of, he doesn't understand it. He thinks it's ruining things, not making things better. But after he sees the whole picture, then already after he sees the whole picture, then he says, now he understands why what looked as something that was being damaging is actually beneficial. That's the mashal to life. That's the mashal to the challenge of Emunah. The mashal challenge of Emunah, the challenge to Emunah is the fact that because we don't see the whole picture, and as human beings, we can't see the whole picture. The Chassam Sefer says in this week's Parsha, When Moshe said to Hashem, show me your glory. And Moshe says, you can see my back. Hashem says to Moshe, you can see my back, you can't see my front. The Chassam Sefer says, I saw it brought down for the Chassam Sefer. The Chassam Sefer explains, Moshe, show me your glory. Moshe said, give me the formula. I want to understand how you run the world. Give me the formula. I want to know. Give me the understanding. Show me your glory. Help me be able to fully fathom how you run the world. Hashem says, you can see my back, not my front. You can't. As a human being, you cannot. You are not able to see my front. You can't see everything clearly. If you want to see everything clearly, you got to stop being a human being. Even you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're a human being. As a human being, you cannot be able to fathom the way Hashem runs the world completely. The Midrashim that say that Hashem showed Moshe more than any other person. But in essence, you're a human being. You can't see it all. You can't grasp it all. You can't comprehend it all. And because we can't comprehend it all, that is why we're always in the middle of everything. We only see part of the picture. But if we understand we're only seeing part of the picture, then that helps us be able to move on from all the challenges to our faith that we see. And therefore, do you know why it's a half a shekel? Why is it a half a shekel that everyone gives towards the formation of the Adonim of these bases? Because the bases represent emunah, they represent faith. And when every Jew gives a half a shekel, the half is meant to remind him, you're only seeing part of the picture. You're not seeing the whole thing. You're only seeing part. And because you're only seeing part, that's how you'll be able to keep your belief and faith in Hashem, although there seem to be all these questions and challenges and contradictions to it. The Be'er Yosef brings an interesting Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi deals with the question, why half a shekel? Why did Hashem ask for half a shekel? And the Yerushalmi answers, because the half a shekel is to remind the Jewish people how they sinned by the golden calf, because Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jewish people, thought the 40 days that Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be on Har Sinai were up. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm going to come back midday of the 40th day. And the Jewish people miscalculated. They thought the 40th day had come. Half the day was gone. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't here. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come down. And therefore they said, Moshe's not coming down. And they got all confused. They lost control. And that's how the Chaita Ego began. So because the Jewish people, when half the day came, that's when they lost control and they thought Moshe was God, and that led to the sin of the golden calf. So therefore, it's a half a shekel. Half a shekel to remember half the day. So the Be'er Yosef says, clearly this needs a little bit more explanation. Needs some more explanation. You know, why are we being told to remember half the day? That half day. So he wants to explain it in a similar way that we just said. The Jewish people miscalculated. According to their calculation, it's the 40th day. Half day is gone. Moshe's not here. They go to Aaron and Hur, and they say, Aaron's not coming down. We need a new Elohim. We need a new leader. We need some kind of leadership. We need some kind of godly leadership now. We know that Hur protested, and they killed Hur for it. So what do you think Hur said? What do you think Hur said to them when he was clearly saying, don't do this? What was he saying to them? What exactly did Hur say? Now again, we don't know clearly what he said. But what do you think Hur said to them when he said, don't do it?
Well, this thing says wait a little bit longer.
Oh, says there, Yosef, that Hur said, why don't you wait for another day? Right. You know, before you do this, wait another day. See, and it's so. If you think about it, it's so simple and beautiful to learn this way. But the truth is, if you would have asked me before I would have seen the Be'er Yosef, I would have said, he said to them, it's a Avodah Zarah, you can't do that. Meaning he didn't address the root problem. He said, it's a Avodah Zarah, you can't do it. He was right. Okay, so they killed him. Says the Be'er Yosef, he wants to suggest what you just said. He didn't say to them, it's a Avodah Zarah. He said to them, why don't you wait another day? Maybe we've miscalculated. Wait another day. They didn't want to hear that, and they killed him. So what's happening is that the Jewish people were facing this challenge. I mean, it was a miscalculation. But the solution to their miscalculation would have been, why don't you consider the possibility that you don't have the whole picture yet? Consider the possibility you don't have the whole picture yet. And that's the half shekel. The half shekel is saying, why do you take, consider the fact that you don't have the whole picture. You only have part of the picture here. Consider that possibility. And that fits in very well with the whole idea that this half shekel goes towards the Adonim. The Adonim represented Emunah. The half shekel is to say, how do we remain strong in our Emunah to remember we're only seeing part of the picture? And that is also part of the reminder of the sin of the golden calf. It also came about the fact the Jewish people decided to say, we have the whole picture, instead of considering the possibility that they don't have the whole picture. Wait it out. Wait and see. Maybe there's more to what's going on here. So that's how he explains that connection. So it's a beautiful, very beautiful approach. Now, he then says, has two more thoughts from the Ber Yosef about this. That's continuation of this. Now, the way that these Adonim, these sockets on the bottom worked, was as I mentioned. You had the boards that were the boards for the walls. Each one had these two, you know, sticks sticking, two things sticking out from the bottom, and each one was stuck into a separate socket. Meaning, you didn't have a socket of two holes; you had a socket, two sockets of one hole. The two sockets went under each board. So, the Yosef, following this whole idea that he gives, that the Adonim, these bases, represent the Muna. He explains, based on that, why it had to be two separate sockets instead of one. And that is because the Rabban tells us, we know that there's a difference of opinion exactly about how many of the Aseres HaDibros, how many of the Ten Commandments did the Jewish people themselves hear? They only hear the first two. Did they hear all ten? Did Moshe Rabbeinu tell them the eight of them? So the Ramban says that the Jewish people heard all ten. The thing was like this. The first two, they heard from Hashem clearly. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God who took you out of Egypt. The first commandment, the second commandment, Lo yilocha elohim acherim, you shall not have other gods. Those first two commandments the Jewish people heard clearly from Hashem. They didn't need Moshe Rabbeinu to explain them anything. The other eight, says the Ramban, the Jewish people heard Hashem saying something, but they couldn't make it out clearly. And they needed Moshe to clarify it to them. So they heard Hashem say ten things. The first two, they got clearly. They were able to clearly comprehend themselves. The last eight, they heard the voice of Hashem, but they couldn't make out clearly what it was. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu had to clarify, decipher for them. So, the first two, says the Ramban, why were those first two so clear to the Jewish people, directly from Hashem? The answer is, because of their importance. Because of the fact that everything hinges on them. The commandment of believing in Hashem, and the prohibition of not to believe in anything else, these are the two main principles of the Torah. Therefore, says the Ber Yosef, if the Adorim represent Emunah, if these bases represent Emunah, and they represent Emunah because, just as these bases hold up the walls, Emunah, our belief in faith, holds up the whole Torah, the Adonim were two sockets per, the Adonim were two sockets. Each board got two sockets, alluding to the fact that there are two parts of Emunah. Two basic parts of Emunah that we have to support everything. And that is, one, we believe in Hashem. Two, we believe in nothing else. That's who he explains that. Then he explains a very interesting comment from the Baal HaTurim. We know that there were the total number of sockets that were used were 100. There were 50 wall boards, and each one had the two things sticking out. Two sockets per each, 100 bases, 100 adonim. Those 100 sockets, those 100 bases, correspond to the 100 brachas supposed to make every day. Ever heard of that? The Gemara says a person has to make 100 brachas every day. Says the commentary of the Baal Haturim. Why? Where does the number 100 come from? Why 100 brachas? The answer is it corresponds to the 100 adonim, the 100 sockets. What's the connection? What's the answer? Now, after we've gone through all of this, what's the answer? What's the connection between brachas and the sockets? The sockets represent emuna. And brachas are meant to strengthen emuna. That's the whole point of a bracha. The whole point of a bracha is to recognize that everything comes from Hashem. So if the sockets represent emuna, and there were 100 of them, Chazal said, based on that, based on the 100 representations of emuna that were in the Mishkan, we now 100 brachas to strengthen the emuna, our emuna in Hashem every single day. That's the Ber Yosef's explanation here. Now, just one last thought about this, and that is just to end with another famous parable. And we talked about how, you know, as human beings, we cannot take in the entire history. We can't take in the whole picture. We can't take in the entire history of the world. But we know there's going to be a point of time when everything will be clarified. When Mashiach comes, everything's going to be clarified. So the mashal, there's a mashal given to a person who traveled to see a beautiful beautiful embroidered tapestry. An artist embroidered a beautiful tapestry, and it was very famous, and this man traveled long distance to see this beautiful artwork of this beautiful embroidered artwork. So he comes, and the artist lays out the tapestry in front of him. And all the man sees is, he sees a bunch of strings hanging. He sees nothing that looks like anything beautiful. It just looks like a mess of hanging strings. And there's no pictures. It's just a mess. And he's saying, this is the most beautiful artwork that everyone has to come and see. The artist says, wait a minute. You're looking at the back of it. Let me show you the front of it. And when he shows him the front, then he sees the beautiful ark that actually is. So Hashem said to Moshe, as I mentioned before, you can see my back. Right? What you're looking at is the back of everything. The back is the back, right? Everything in the back is so to speak, you know, you're seeing the back of it. When you look at the back of something, you can't see the full picture. You gotta look at the front. Everything that we're in a situation now, we're looking at the back of everything. When Mashiach comes, everything will be turned to the front. We'll see the whole thing, the whole picture, and then everything will be understood. Okay. Okay. Let's talk now about, let me share with you a thought about Shabbos. Because the Parsha talks about Shabbos. If you look on page 490, look at Pasuk Yud Beis, the beginning of the new paragraph. Vayimra Hashem el Meir Shalemar, Hashem said to Moshe, Va'ata da'aber al b'nei Yisrael leimar, you shall speak to the Jewish people, saying, Acha shapsoisai tishmeru, you shall guard, you shall keep my shapsoisai, my shabbosis, my sabbaths. Ki ois hi b'nei b'neichem, for it is a sign between me and between you, the d'reiseichem, for all generations, v'das to know, k'ani Hashem akadishchem, I am Hashem who sanctifies you. The Ramana asks that the pasuk says, ach shabsosai. Shabsosai means my shabbosos, plural. Right after that, the pasuk says, ki oishi, it is a sign. That's singular. Starts with plural, goes to singular. Why? Says the Ramban. Well, you know, there are many shabbosos in a year, right? There's about, you know, over 50 of them a year, 52 of them a year, and each one is a sign. So it says Shabbosos, plural, because there are many Shabbosos throughout the year, and each one is a sign. That's the Ramban's answer. The commentary of Ksava Kabbalah explains in the following way. The Ksava Kabbalah starts off actually explaining, focusing on the word Shabbos. Now, if I were to ask, what does Shabbos mean? What's the answer? What does Shabbos mean? What does the word Shabbos mean?
Rest.
Rest. Right? Rest. It means rest. It can be used to mean cessation of work, cessation of activity. Okay? The Ksava Kabbalah says it could also actually have I'll call it a positive explanation. In the sense of that it's not just, so to speak, not doing something, but it actually has a meaning of doing something. In the book of Koheles, Shlomo Melech says, Shafti v'ro'isi. When he talks about, when Shlomo Melech talks about, I looked at certain principles that I had, certain beliefs, certain understandings that I had. Shafti, I returned, I went back to them, I reviewed them, I thought them over, and I gained a new insight. Meaning I started off with certain beliefs, certain principles, understandings, and then I changed my mind about them. Because I went back and I thought about them. So the word Shabbos also comes from the word shav. I'm returning back to the principles that I first had, the understandings that I first had. I went back to them, I thought them over, and I had a change of heart. So therefore, the word Shabbos is related to shav, which is in a number of times the Tanakh used to mean to rethink something. To rethink. And therefore, the word Shabbos, says the Ksava Kabbalah, also means to say that not only on Shabbos do we rest, do we stop working, but we have to also, on Shabbos, we have to take our weekday thoughts and we have to change from those thoughts to being Shabbos Hashem, to our thoughts being focused on Hashem. Shabbos is a time, like Harech sages say, why did Hashem give us Shabbos? To study Torah. The word Shabbos also again relates to that word Shafti v'ra'isi, like Shlomo Melech said. I went back and I saw. I went back, I had a change of mind, I reviewed, I thought things over, and I see things this way. That word shav is used in a context of thinking, of contemplating. Shabbos Hashem means that now your thoughts have to be thoughts to Hashem. That's what Shabbos is about. Shabbos is a time that we have to take our thoughts away from our weekday thinking, our mundane thoughts, and now our thoughts on Shabbos have to be focused on Hashem. That's a whole new understanding of the word Shabbos. Shabbos is not just, so to speak, refraining from doing something. It actually means to do something. It means to change your mindset from weekday mindset to a totally spiritual mindset focusing on Hashem. And therefore, says the Ksava Kabbalah, typically we're told to Eshabsoisai Tishmeru. We're told to keep Shabbos. We know there's prohibitions not to desecrate Shabbos, not to do work, Losasu Malacha, not to do work, not to do activity on Shabbos. And then we have a positive mitzvah to keep Shabbos. So typically we look at them both as one and the same, right? If you refrain from working, if you refrain from doing the work that's prohibited, now I've kept Shabbos. It's really one and the same. I'm not doing it. There's nothing more in the positive commandment than what the negative, what the prohibition dictates to me. Says the Ksava Kabbalah, no, not according to this. According to this, now, the positive commandment of keeping Shabbos is not just keep the prohibition that I told you. Keep refraining from what I told you to refrain from. It actually means to do something. It means to go ahead and change your thought patterns, to change your mindset, and to focus it completely on Hashem. And therefore, he says, now we understand that why our sages say, if you keep Shabbos, you could have been an idol worshiper, and you're forgiven. Why is Shabbos so unique in that sense? The answer is, because Shabbos, again, you're not going to fulfill Shabbos just by refraining from the activity you're not supposed to do. You have not kept Shabbos until you have actually now changed your mindset from a weekday mindset to a godly mindset. And if you do that, That's a big accomplishment. That's the kind of accomplishment that can make up for idol worship. That can make up for idol worship. And he also says, interestingly, that, you know, if Shabbos is just about rest, right? And it's about not doing malacha, what we call, right? What the forbidden activity of Shabbos is called malacha. It's called malacha, it's called work. The word malacha means creative work. The word malacha means that you do something that creates something beneficial. It creates something beneficial to the world. That's malacha, creative activity, something that creates a benefit to the world. So if on Shabbos I have to refrain from malacha, it would seem like, okay, on Shabbos, there's no creative activity. No creative activity on Shabbos. Shabbos is just about rest, and I don't do anything creative. I don't do anything beneficial for the world. Says the Ksav HaKabbalah, if Shabbos means like what I say, that Shabbos, to fulfill Shabbos means that you have to actually change your mindset to a mindset of focusing on the spiritual, the mindset of focusing on Hashem, that's very creative. That's very beneficial. You are doing something. You are doing something creative and beneficial for the world when you keep Shabbos the way you're supposed to, which is, again, refraining from work and refocusing yourself totally on Hashem. So now, getting back to the first question. Why does it first say Shabbos Asai in a plural and then Os individual? The answer is, says the Ksav HaKabbalah, that the Shabbos Asai doesn't mean many Shabbosis, but it means the two Shabbosis that we have to keep. It means we have to refrain from certain types of physical activity, and we also have to focus our minds totally in Hashem. Keep my Shabbosis. Keep the two Shabbosis. Every Shabbos has two parts to it. It has refrain from certain activities, and it's about now focusing yourself totally in Hashem. And so that Shabbos Osai, keep my Shabbosis. Why? Because they're one sign. What that means is, the Ksav HaKabbalah says, is that we have to, as much as we have these two aspects of Shabbos we have to keep, they're not two independent concepts. On the contrary, the reason why we're told to refrain from activity is that we can be totally focused on Hashem. So the two parts really is one is supposed to lead into the other. One is there for the other one. Therefore, it's Os. It's one sign. It's not two separate things. One is supposed to be the prerequisite, the preparation for the other. So therefore, we start off calling it Shabbosis because we have two types of Shabbos that we have to keep. But in essence, it's all one. And then it concludes with a very new explanation to a famous Medrash. How many Shabbosis do we have to keep for Mashiach to come? How many? So there is one version that we have that if the... Let me just find the way he brings it down here. Ilu Shomer Yisrael Shtei Shabbosis Miyad Nigolin. The two Jewish people would keep two Shabbosis, they'd be redeemed. Why keep two Shabbosis? Why two? One's not enough, you have to keep two. Hashem doesn't really know if you're keeping it the one time, you need the second time to keep it. Says the Ksav HaKabbalah, it doesn't mean two separate Shabbosis. If Klal Yisrael would keep both Shabboses, both parts of Shabbos that we have to do, Miyad Nigolin Mashiach would come.